Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. A warm welcome to the show. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Awfully glad you're with me today, Bill Arnold. Here, and we've got a great second hour coming up. We've got Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, Iowa. The great state of Iowa will be with us in just a minute. And then Dr. Paul Meyer is going to be with us. You may know him from the Minerith Meyer Clinic in Dallas, Texas. He's one of the foremost psychologists in Christian counseling. And I remember buying a book that he and his partner wrote called Happiness is a Choice. I think I bought that in the 70s. I think that's when it came out. And read it cover to cover, and I'm real curious to find out how he feels about that book some 30 years later to see if he is still as committed to the thoughts in that book as he was when he wrote it. But there's also so many things happening in mental health today with, we're going to talk to him about genetics and how genetics plays a key role in mental health and depression. And there's so many components to depression. For example, there's lots of spiritual components to depression. There's also some brain components, brain chemical components to depression. And he's going to chat with us about that. That's all coming up in the second part of this hour. Now, and as you know, I love scripture on the show, and we're going to keep trying to get 1 million voices reading scripture on the show. And so we're going to hear a verse, and then we're going to go right to Patrick. We'll be back in just a minute.
Philippians 4, 6, and 7. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus.
Sometimes you can forget what's most important, and you find it in a cabin up north. A road trip with silly songs and ice cream stops, or a sunrise over the lake.
I love you, Mom.
You find simplicity again, and the joy that a loving family and a loving God bring to your life. So in a world where vacations don't last, we're here to help you grasp on to the things that matter most. Connecting faith to life. Faith Radio.
Your prayers matter and are heard by God. When you pray, lives can be changed. Each week, the Faith Radio prayer team joins together to pray for relationships to be strengthened, finances to be increased for God's glory, for our leaders to follow God's will, and for so much more. Will you join us? The Faith Radio prayer team, made up of hundreds of listeners, receives an email with each week's prayer focus. You can be a part of the Faith Radio prayer team by signing up at myfaithradio.com.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain,
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
It is 7 minutes after the hour. I sure enjoyed talking to Stephen Mansfield. We talked about manliness, and he says in his book that manhood is suffering today. Men seem to be confused about what God wants them to be and how to live out their manly calling. He said, I often get this question from men I meet. Are there any examples of real men that we can emulate? And I said, yes. And he talks about his dad. But I can think of one, and I'm speaking to him now on our Skype line, Patrick Albanese. Hello, Patrick.
No, it's me.
Don't sell yourself short.
Well, somebody's got to sell me short. I am quite flattered. We're in precipitous West Des Moines.
Yes, I know. You've got quite a bit of precipitous, don't you?
Yeah, we had, we had one of those little kiddie pools in the backyard. It was empty, and it got 6 inches of rain in under 2 hours.
Wow. Now, there was an incident in Des Moines. Sadly, a man lost his life, got swept away in the current, and he was a radio personality and a friend of yours as well. Friend of Rebecca's as well.
Born acquaintance, a good friend. Yeah, I think Rebecca certainly knew him more than I did because she used to walk the same hallowed halls more frequently. He had just finished prostate cancer treatment, kind of got the clean bill of health, and you know, driving with the family, as I understand it, and the water it swells up quickly. My brother-in-law had somebody that was driving down a street, and before he knew it, he was in 8 feet of water.
Wow.
People, you know, you like to think to yourself, okay, these people, they just don't have the smarts that I have. I would never find myself in that situation. It's fast. And when you watch when the city drains, when they get full and they start regurgitating the water back up into the streets as it's still coming down, boy, it swells quickly. It's frightening. So his car stalled and he took a step out and instantly got swept away in the current. And,
have there been any other details that have come out? I mean, did he get swept away and bang his head on something? Did he go unconscious? What happened? I mean, we all know how to swim a little bit, but is the power of the current just that strong that he got swept away and drowned?
I haven't seen any more details about it. The only other additional thing I had heard was that while he was swept away, his home, which he was on, I guess he was on his way home, also got flooded. So his wife, his family's at home. Whoever he was with, the other people escaped okay. He got swept away. My wife was working at the Performing Arts Center here, and they nearly got flooded. Their roof, which in the center, it tapers in. It's about 4 feet deep. And it so can form a little swimming pool up on top there. And I'd say the highest elevation is 60 feet, maybe 70 feet. And the drains in the city, they couldn't handle the load. All the water came back up, filled it, and was about to spill over the side.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I get a text from my wife. She's on the roof in this. It's, you know, speaking of Wizard of Oz, it's a twister. It was pretty rough out there. She says, I'm on the roof.
Yeah.
Why are you calling me? I do not want to hear this, but precipitous Westmore.
Yeah. Well, now the socialist Democrats say that Bernie Sanders is too right wing. Now, I just have to say, you were once a diehard socialist. What happened?
Well, and a lot of people, they may not know this. I grew up in a socialist environment. Now, on the positive, of course, I did have free health care. My housing was actually taken care of for me. Food was actually taken care of for me. And it was not bad. I don't want to push the socialist agenda here. It wasn't bad. But now here's the catch. When I turned 18, my folks kicked me out. So suddenly I think I mean this stuff has to be paid for in some fashion. She certainly has promised a lot. And I know she was a bartender like 6 months ago, and I've been a bartender for a career, and you can't get much more capitalist than bartending for a living.
Mm-hmm.
Because you go into work and you say, well, it's up to me how much I make today, how hard I work, how good I am with my customers, my relationships with my customers. And I'm thinking, you know, if she's in 6 months from that environment, she's gone full socialist, she must not have been a very good bartender. I'm not sure. It might have just been easier to dip into other people's tips. You know what? Why work for it when I can just take your tips?
So yeah.
We'll see. But it's I don't know if that's a winning platform to say, hey, free everything and we're just going to, you know, tax everybody else for it. I mean, at some point in time, don't you have to kind of scratch your noggin and say, you know, am I that guy they're going to tax? I mean, eventually they're coming after my money, right?
Mm-hmm. Eventually. You know, I think it's something about summertime that we all love. And 4th of July seems like this really lovely holiday that everybody's in a fairly good mood. You gather with family, you celebrate Independence Day, you have some fireworks, maybe a barbecue in the backyard. It's really a nice holiday, and it also seems that it's a great time to take a break from the stress of, to be honest, all the negativity that's going on in the news.
Yeah, I'm beginning to wonder, you know, obviously we think the social media stuff's great, but with the 24-hour news cycle and then the social media on top of it, yeah, you know, in the past, it just seemed like you could get away from all the negativity and take a break, and now you can't, or it's harder. You can. It's just much more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people sit around at the barbecue now with their smartphones, and I go, please tell me you're just doing something fun and not scouring the headlines for the latest outrage of the day. You know,
yeah, but the fact that they're looking at their smartphones in the backyard anyway seems kind of disturbing.
True, unless if they're at my house, they're looking up how to put out a barbecue fire.
Yeah, and it's very helpful, isn't it?
That is pretty helpful information. Quick, look this up. Hey, Siri.
Yeah. So what are you hearing in prestigious Des Moines on the what kind of discussion is going on about the Supreme Court nominee that's going to be announced on Monday?
I've been kind of avoiding it because the few people as soon as that vacancy, came up, of course, Facebook turned into the most horrific place to visit. I don't know if you had a similar experience.
I'm not on Facebook. Yeah.
I know you don't. But I mean, other people might have been saying to you like, oh my gosh, you should see everybody's just all of a sudden everybody's an expert on everything. And it seems like the whole world now, maybe we shouldn't be surprised, revolves around one issue, and that's abortion, which is – it's startling. And so now we have these litmus tests, and I saw they dug up one of the candidates in one of her congressional approval hearings. Dianne Feinstein said the dogma runs deep with you or something like that, referring to her Catholicism. I'm like, oh my gosh, we've gone full Star Wars here. Yeah. Dogma. I sense dogma with you.
Yeah.
So I am seeing that it's a very negative thing. And then everybody's got their advice saying, well, he has to appoint because they stole that one seat. And then there was initially what's good for the goose. They shouldn't be allowed to appoint anybody in an election year. It's like, well, that was a presidential election year. This is not a presidential election year. And you think, oh gosh, everybody's just twisting everything to make it fit what they want. And I wash my hands of it and say, I would like to trust that there are actually some pretty smart people in charge of this. At this point, I'm actually willing to say, I trust that President Trump is going to at least try to nominate somebody like a Neil Gorsuch, and that just maybe we might have a more conservative – I didn't want to say it's a conservative-leaning court. I would like to say it's people that pay homage, which hopefully I didn't say that and it came out cheese. Well, that's fromage. Never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, fromage. To the actual Constitution, I am perfectly happy if you put people on there. I don't care their political leaning if they say it says what it says and it doesn't say what it doesn't say.
Yeah.
And that's how I do it. And until you, Congress, write new laws and, we have to deem whether they're, legal based on the Constitution, reading of the Constitution, I'm plenty happy with that nominee.
Yeah.
The fact that, we have these people saying we need somebody who's nonpartisan, and they say, but we need them to be certain to vote on the left or on the right. And I just kind of want to raise my hand in the back of the room again and go, I believe that is not the definition of nonpartisan, but okay. Did I sound like Columbo there for a second?
You sound a little bit like him. Yeah, I liked it. I liked it. All right, because I know you have a raincoat on, let me take a short break, and I'll be back with Patrick Albanese in just a minute. We're back. It's 19 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here talking to Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. Patrick, remember a time when standing up for what you believed was considered noble? Now, if you stand up for what you believe, you're shouted down and people form protests against you.
Yeah, I never know when we're doing the speak truth to power or the shut up and be, and be obedient thing. Yeah. Now we've got the, people can say things like Robert De Niro evidently is speaking truth to power or power. And I thought, I'm not entirely certain Robert De Niro is in a weak position, but okay. But of course, for the last 8 years, you haven't been able to say anything, or you had a whole bunch of labels affixed to you. And now standing up for what you believe in, isn't it funny how people say, well, I'll determine what's worth believing in. Yeah, it's gotten kind of goofy, hasn't it?
Yeah, very goofy. I don't know if you heard any of my interview with Stephen Mansfield on manliness and manhood, and it's an interesting topic. We've talked about this a whole bunch because we're fascinated by it, but it is there in our society today. Men doesn't seem like they're being very manly.
No, and then of course, if they act manly, I remember when people, there was a period of time, and when this probably started mid-80s, and you'd hear the, these guys, these macho guys acting all macho. And, you know, I didn't really understand what, you know, macho, what they meant by that. Is it the guy, you know, the Tony Manero? Was it Tony Manero in Saturday Night Fever?
Yeah, Tony Manero.
Yeah. Yeah, I go, is that macho? Is it just a guy who says, I can fix that. Just give me a hammer and a sawzall, and I'll have that baby up and running in no time. And you're
we're in trouble. If that's the case, yeah. You and I are in trouble.
That's exactly right. But I think, I mean, obviously, if I was in charge of the world, I would fix some things. You know, first thing I would, you know, I would mandate that 2-liter bottles be square instead of round so that they can't roll around in the back of your vehicle and do the search and destroy mission for the rest for your loaf of Wonder Bread. I would be in charge of that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the decisions I would make. But I think it's now gotten so silly that you say, do we, like Jordan Peterson is huge right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what he has to say is very much like Stephen Mansfield. You go very, it's accurate. It's true. And there's a part of you that says, we shouldn't need this. Should we? I mean, aren't we, you know, God really did build us with sort of, we sort of have an instruction manual. There's an instinctual thing about us that we kind of know what to do. There are many things that we just do naturally. And did we just program it out so much that we now have forgotten how to be men? And have women forgotten how to be women? I'm not man enough to ask that question.
I wished you were man enough to ask that question because we could ask Rebecca.
I have five sisters, and some of them listen to the show.
You don't want to get in trouble with them, do you?
No. I mean, they, as you know, they taught me that women are just much more gentler and kind.
Yeah.
So, it's a shame that we sort of need that. And does it make you wonder, do you have those times where you say, have I kind of forgotten? I feel like I'm, you know, I still have a bit of the chivalry in me. I'll open the door. I don't even hesitate. Here's how strong and brave I am. I go, well, she might be one of those people that says, I don't need nobody to hold no door for me or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to take that chance, darn it, because I'm brave.
Yeah, I like that. You're a Renaissance man. So Stephen was talking about how men are increasingly more bored at church. Which I find interesting because they're really not connected. And do you think, and do you see it in your church that men are more withdrawn and less involved, or do you find that men in your church are not that way at all?
You know, there's an interesting phenomenon, and I was very happy to report that on this year's Father's Day, my church has kind of taken a turn. There always seemed to be this discrepancy between the Mother's Day, women are wonderful, and Father's Day. It's like, guys, you showed up. Well, boy, do we have some lessons for you today. Here's everywhere that you're messing up. And I think that's part of the disconnect for men. It's not like we need to show up in church and have people praise us and say that we're perfect. We know we're not.
Mm-hmm.
But there did seem to be, for a while, a lot of churches seemed to be going down that road of saying, well, we can beat up on the men. I'm trying to think of there was that one pastor, and he was eventually removed, that built a very large church, I think, in the Pacific Northwest. And I would listen to some of his sermons. I said, this is really – it's not even about being uncomfortable. I'm okay with an uncomfortable sermon. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
But I said, this is this guy's kind of acting like the alpha male in the room saying, ladies, don't you just wish your husband was more like me? There's only one of me. And I think when churches start preaching a message that's almost like that, that if there's a pastor or a message that's saying, I'm the ideal, you should emulate this, guys kind of check out. We don't do well with that, you know, and we like to pick our own role models. So maybe that's part of it. But men certainly – I feel can get bored in church, partly because they say, you know, you're trying to tell me how to be a man. I'll give you an example. I was going to a men's group and they grabbed one of these DVD series, and basically it was how to be a man. And it was three pastors kind of playing the WWF game of tag each other, saying, now you go in and beat them up for a little bit. And they, you know, they said, you're just a mess. You're wounded. And it was a 6 DVD set.
Whoa.
You didn't get through all six,
did you?
I dropped out pretty quickly. And it had 6 lessons on – Yeah, six lessons on each DVD, and as I'm counting, there was like 10 talking points on each one, things you were supposed to, you know, now this week work on, you know, these things. I go, wait a minute, that's like 360 things. I'm a three-item guy. You know, if you can, just give me your top three. Just give me your top three, not 360. And the funny thing was, is the guys that were – I was taking the course with, they said, we did this course. It was fantastic. We did it like 2 years ago, and they all had their notebooks from 2 years ago. I go, how much of that have you kind of accomplished? And to a man, they said, none.
Wow.
None of it. So it was too much.
You know,
maybe we're simple. I don't know.
Yeah, I hear that. I've heard men say that their deepest desire is to bring their children into adulthood. Now, for you, your father died when you were about 13.
Yeah.
So what was it like trying to navigate your way through adolescence and into adulthood without your dad around?
Well, now, you've been through a similar thing.
I have.
And so I would wager, and actually, I don't think we've talked about this. Your answer is probably going to be the same as mine. Your mother, and it wasn't that she raised you that way. You know, it's like, oh, she's going to teach you how to be a man. You said, I need to be the man for her.
Yes.
Because she's wounded right now. And that was just byproduct of the age that both you and I were about the same age when this happened, where you said, my mom's wounded and I love my mom. And so I got to step up. So I think that's a lot of how that went. Plus, you know, my father had a lot of friends that always checked in on me.
Nice.
Said, I'm here for you. You know, I'll be, you know, I can't replace your dad. And I had great uncles. I had wonderful uncles. So, you know, I think that's. Is it that hard to really understand what it is you want to do? You know, you do want to raise your kids well, and maybe you make these promises that you're not going to be like your parents. I've never really done that. I mean, my mom would say those goofy things, you know, if you lost something. Well, it didn't just get up and walk away. You
know? Yeah.
So the other day, you know, an item is lost, and, you know, I don't want to say the things that my mother said, but I lost the item, and I go on, wait, has anybody seen my iPhone charger? And my 9-year-old says, well, it didn't just get up and walk away. Well,
where did he get that?
Did that skip a generation? I did not introduce that. How did that get here?
Oh, my goodness. How did he come to say that? Seriously.
I don't know. I must have said it as a joke once, and it stuck.
Okay.
But the fact that my kids lie in wait saying, I will spring that. That will be revisited on Dad, and he will regret the day he ever said it. But it was funny.
I always love they say it's always in the last place you look. Well, of course it's in the last place you look, because once you find it, you stop looking for it.
Yeah, except I decide to keep looking for it because I just don't want anything to be true all the time.
That's true. All right, Patrick, thanks so much for being on the show. Always great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, have a great day, and a happy 4th of July to you and your fam.
Thanks, you too.
Yep. All right, 28 and a half minutes past the hour. Take a little break, and then coming up next, we're going to talk to Dr. Paul Meyer, a very well-known psychologist, lives in Richardton, Texas. You may know him from the Minerith Meyer Clinics. He's written many books. We're going to talk about genes and how that affects depression and mental well-being. We'll be back in just a minute.
Illegal and unthinkable. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. Abortion's long been illegal in Argentina, except in cases of rape or if the life of the mother is at risk. But a bill crafted in the Argentinian House that permits first trimester abortions is now headed to the Argentinian Senate. They'll probably reject it, but abortion advocates see it as progress toward legalizing the killing of babies. That's why I will continue to say that our fight against abortion is more than an issue of what the law does or doesn't permit. While we must do all we can to make or keep abortion illegal, we want something greater. We want a culture where abortion is unthinkable. As I said recently on Breakpoint, with abortion by pill now so inexpensive and available, legal wins aren't enough. Evil never rests, but neither does God, and neither can his church. So please, keep the pressure on your legislators, keep helping women with unplanned pregnancies, keep making the case for life with your neighbors, and keep praying. For more on faith and culture, come to breakpoint.org. I'm John Stone Street.
Each day, together, growing in our faith.
I do listen regularly, and I just appreciate that it does bring me a lot of positive hope. daily and has for many years. Sometimes you think that God's talking right to you.
It's encouragement and hope for your daily journey, connecting your faith to your everyday life on Faith Radio.
Thank you for listening to Faith Radio, where you can find relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching to help you grow in your faith. Our mission is to lead people to Christ and nurture believers in their faith through Christ-centered media. Find out more about your favorite programs and features and find helpful articles on relevant topics such as marriage and family, finances, health and wellness, and spiritual growth, all at myfaithradio.com.
Welcome back to the show. It's 33 minutes after the hour. Sorry to say that we had a little bit of a mishap with Paul Meyer. He was not able to, looks like he's not going to be able to make it today. So we are going to hear a little bit from Rick Mattson. I had him in studio a couple weeks ago. We had a great conversation with him. He's an apologist, and he hits college campuses and holds forums where he invites people to come in and try to ask questions that might stump him. And he is just really a charming guy. And he's also written a book, a very easy to read book of stories of people who have come to faith from the most diverse sort of personalities you could imagine. And it's a really delightful, easy read. And he loves to pass that out just as a way of saying, hey, you should read some stories about people that came to faith in Christ. It's really interesting. And you pick it up and you go, wow, he was right. This is interesting. This is good stuff. So we're going to have that conversation with him. We'll take a very short break and then get right to it. It's 35 minutes after the hour. I'll be right back.
Pray Together Sunday is a simple opportunity for churches to join with congregations across America to ask God for spiritual renewal in our country. Ask your church to join us for Pray Together Sunday on July 8th and commit to a time of prayer for our country during your church's Sunday worship service. Together, we will lift our voices on behalf of our communities and nation. Register and find resources for your church at nae.net/praytogether. Pray Together Sunday on July 8th is organized by the National Association of Evangelicals, where we use influence for good.
We're back. You know, it wasn't too long ago I had Rick Mattson in studio, and I said, so what else are you working on, Rick? And then he pulled out another book that he just finished called Faith Unexpected, Real Stories of People Who Found What They Never Imagined. And so I've invited him back to come and talk about this book. It's a book that you can hand out to just about anybody because I think people love stories. And when they hear stories of conversion, they're pretty strong, pretty powerful. Rick, welcome back.
Thank you, Bill. Good to be here.
Thank you once again. So tell me about this book, Faith Unexpected.
Faith Unexpected arose because I have a ton of resources in my library of books of arguments for the Christian faith that I can hand to a friend who's kind of on the way. Maybe they're on the journey toward faith or they're stuck and they need some convincing. So I can hand them books by C.S. Lewis or Ravi Zacharias or Greg Boyd or, you know, a number of people. But in my library, and then I was looking online too, there's not very many books that you can hand, resources you can hand to people that are books of stories. And this culture that we're living in right now is it's a society that values story.
Mm-hmm.
And people are convinced by stories. They identify with stories. And so I just said to my wife, Sharon, one day, I should write a book of stories. I travel all over the country. I could interview people, get their stories, put them in a book, make it a resource that's not overwhelming. It's only 110 pages. And then people can, from the church, can just give them out to their friends and neighbors and coworkers mm-hmm. and so forth.
And I need to tell my listeners that you work for InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, and you're a national apologetics specialist. Mm-hmm. So you do go around the country. You're on college campuses, and you hold a forum called Stump the Chump for mm-hmm. listeners that may have heard you before. So you do have quite an opportunity to collect stories
yeah,
in your work.
I do. And I love defending the faith. I love giving the reasonable defense for the Christian faith to atheists, agnostics, people of other religions on college campuses. But there was still a tool missing in my tool belt,
yeah.
and that was story. And I myself wanted to get better at telling stories because people can relate to them. And then I wanted a resource that was filled with stories that I could hand people. So when I leave town, I can hand them this book, Faith
Nice.
Unexpected. Or when I get back here to the Twin Cities where I live, I can hand them out to I'm a golfer. So I belong to a couple golf leagues, and I hand them out to my friends there. And mm-hmm. I say, hey, I wrote this book. It's a book about faith. It can maybe be encouraging to you as you think about the possibility of faith in your life or developing your faith further. And it's just so easy to give out to people. And I never had that resource before. It's
yeah.
like, well, here's Mere Christianity. It's 175 pages or whatever it is. I
right.
don't know exactly. It's kind of intimidating. It's written
kind
in
of.
Language that's 50 years old. And,
yeah.
you know, it's not that easy to read. You can't just give it to anybody. But this book, you can give it to anybody.
Yeah, and who doesn't love stories?
Exactly.
And stories stick with us.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the stories
okay.
in the book, if you don't mind.
Sure, that'd be good. Yeah, well, one thing I did is I wanted to make sure these are stories that represent a diversity of backgrounds. So the lead story, Charles Ramirez, a macho man, we called it, he is a Mexican-American. I interviewed Charles in Phoenix, Arizona. He has a great story of coming to faith. James Chambers is African-American. Sarah Gross lives here in the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
He is white, not Sarah Groves, but Sarah Gross.
Right.
yes. Deidre Reyes. Deidre is Native American. She's a Hopi, lives on a reservation in Arizona. And I interviewed Deidre. Oh, wow, what a story she has of coming to faith out of Hopi rituals and spirituality and some really severe demonic oppression.
Wow. Can you share some
yes.
of that story?
Yeah. Well, Deidre grew up on the Hopi reservation, and we don't mean to disparage reservations or Hopi people or anything here. That's not the point. But Deidre and her father had fallen into some really serious demonic oppression. And so when her father passed away, she began to have spirit channeling back to her father.
Mm. Okay.
And the local medicine man then got involved between them. And started warning her from a Hopi perspective that this was not a good thing. And so they did an exorcism from the Hopi spirituality. So this got really confusing.
Now, did the medicine man go to medical school?
Did not go to medical school.
Okay, I was just always wondering about that.
But honestly, the account of her and her mother visiting the Hopi medicine man, I have an extended account of that in the book. It's really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that took place in there. And then she fell into the drug culture of Phoenix, and oh my goodness, it was really a train wreck. And then when she met Christ through a local church and pastor, it was an amazing experience that she had. And so that's Deidre Reyes. It's called The Haunting of Deidre Reyes
wow.
here, chapter 4,
there's
and it's a great
spiritual
story.
Spiritual stuff in her past,
spiritual warfare,
there?
And
yeah.
it's right there.
And there's probably generations of it.
Exactly.
And breaking the bonds of that
is correct.
Not going to be a simple lockpick.
That is correct. And so, again, I want to emphasize here, we're not trying to disparage the Hopi people at all. But her singular experience with demonic oppression and spiritual warfare.
And drug activity.
And drug activity was
yeah.
really an amazing story. The Curious Case of Cole Foster, that's chapter 5 here. Cole is an atheist student at the University of Utah. That's where I met him.
Because okay.
I was doing Stump the Chump out there, and I
oh,
met
nice.
Cole. And his story of coming to faith from atheism to Christianity is really, really cool and involves a mountaintop experience at the Living Room Trail up behind the University of Utah.
Nice. Rick, let
yes,
me take a
ahead.
Little break
yes.
as we're talking about Rick's book, Faith Unexpected, which is real stories of people who found what they never imagined. And this is a great little book because you can hand this out to people who are interested in hearing stories of the faith. We'll take a very short break and return in just a minute. All right, we are back, and I've got Rick Manson in studio. He's written a book called Faith Unexpected, Real Stories of People Who Found What They Never Imagined. Rick works for InterVarsity Christian Fellowship and does apologetics forums called Stump the Chump. And he did one of these in Utah and met a gentleman named Cole, who's got quite a story. Would you tell us more about that, Rick?
Cole got involved in InterVarsity through our Greek ministry out there. So InterVarsity has different niche ministries on campuses to different ethnicities, to athletes, but we also have a ministry to sororities and fraternities. Cole was involved in a fraternity there, and he started coming to events that InterVarsity was putting on. He met a young woman, and they developed a relationship, and she kept bringing him to InterVarsity. He kept hearing the gospel. He had many objections, many of which we had talked about last time I was here, Bill, of Old Testament, weird stories in the Old Testament. But gradually, he found that the Christian students actually listened to him and didn't just preach at him. And they took his objections seriously and tried to respond to them, and they cared for him.
Wow.
They showed him the love of Christ through hospitality and friendship and a lot of picnics and hikes and so forth. And he just gradually came to faith. And there's a picture on the back of the book of him coming to faith on the living room trail. They're going up the mountain, and my friend Allison Smith shared the gospel with him. And just as he was – kind of the light was going on, it dawned on him that this was true. A rainbow appeared in the sky over their conversation. Hmm. And Allison's husband took a picture of it, and that picture is on the book back cover of the book. It's really an amazing, as we say, coincidence with quotation marks around it. So that's Cole's story, and he still lives in Utah, and now he volunteers with the youth ministry, mm-hmm. and he's an engineer there and doing very well.
Rick, do you find sometimes people go on the offensive, and they're thinking basically this, because you're not going to like me, I'm going to go on the offensive and become unlikable?
Yeah, because that's a good insight.
They just don't have a good self-esteem, or they assume you're not going to like them. And then Christians show up and they care about a person, and it melts them.
Yeah, I think that is a good insight because it's a defense mechanism. I know that by myself, I'm not going to win you over. I'm not going to be a charmer. It's just not in my appearance or in my personality or whatever. So I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to become the contrarian here.
Right.
And everything that is A, I'm going to be B. And that's how I'm going to define myself in opposition to everything else. And a person like that really needs to be cared for, and their objections and arguments need to be taken seriously. And, Bill, I would say further, they need to be brought into Christian community. One-on-one life is great, but how about 1 on 10? You come and hang out with 10 of my Christian friends, or come to my church, mm-hmm. or come to my campus ministry, or come to my alpha group, or come to my neighborhood Bible study, or whatever it is. It's the body of Christ that is often the powerful witness that we need.
Yeah, 1 on 1 is great, but like you say, you come and you're in a room of 10 people who are all paying attention and being kind and being caring, and that's a little overwhelming.
It really is. They've all got the love of Christ.
Love
I've got the love of Christ times 10. Here.
Right, right. So what about Nicole Chong?
Oh, yes, Nicole. Well, I interviewed Nicole at UCLA. I drove up the 401. It was raining. It was a parking lot. I got to a In-N-Out Burger. Finally got an appointment with Nicole. I didn't know if it was going to happen. Went up to the apartment where she and some roommates were living, interviewed her, and found that she was living in Hedrick Hall at UCLA, and students from the campus ministry there kept inviting her first to swing dancing.
Okay.
So that was the incremental step. And she didn't want to go. They kept inviting her. Finally, she said, okay, I'll go. Because they challenged her. How do you know you're not going to like swing dancing unless you go? So she went. She loved it. Well, then she finally ended up on Catalina Island with the campus ministry there. And they ministered to her, and she was part of a healing service and saw God do some amazing miracles. And then she came back to UCLA and kept going to the parties and the events and the teaching and so forth. And she just – it just gradually dawned on her one day, like, wow, I never saw this coming. And that's why I called the book Faith Unexpected. Uh-huh. She did not expect to ever find Jesus or any spirituality, Christian spirituality. She grew up in a home, I believe, that was Chinese, Cambodian, Eastern spirituality, mm-hmm. never expected Jesus. And one day, Jesus kind of came flying in out of left field, and she embraced him in faith. And when she was telling me the story, when I interviewed her, she was crying, telling her testimony on videotape, and then I was crying listening to it as well. And whenever I go back and watch that video, it's really – really moving, and her story is summarized here in 3,000 words. You know, these stories go fast. I couldn't tell the whole thing. And it's a great story, honestly.
Well, the book is filled with unlikely candidates.
Correct.
And isn't it true that we all know people in our lives that we would look at and think they're an unlikely person because they're hardened or they're so lost or, you know, what am I going to do to try to finally break through the shell? So this book can be a tremendous encouragement and really enjoyable reading just to kind of get yourself reoriented to think, you know what, I need to be persistent.
Yes.
I keep hearing this being the thread, Rick, is they were persistent with Nicole. Mm-hmm. How do you know you're not going to enjoy swing dancing?
Exactly.
They just stayed and kept asking.
That gentle little challenge.
That gentle little challenge. And I think that's an important reminder for all of us that, you know, if you knock on a door once, people might go, what was that sound? But if you keep knocking, 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 eventually they're going to have to answer.
Eventually it'll turn into a triple espresso. Yay!
Way, cool!
Oh,
exactly.
Go.
Exactly. So I think we have time for one more story.
Okay, sure.
If you have one, do you want to share?
Yeah, my own story is told in here. That's number 10. I think I'll leave that to readers. But number 8, Donald Wellington. Oh, my goodness, what a story. I interviewed Donald in Washington, D.C., he is an advisor at the Pentagon for the U.S. Air Force, tactics around the globe. He came up through the military, through West Point, people with background in philosophy, logic, military, and music, too. He was
in, I already don't like this guy.
He was,
he's got too much talent.
He was in Iraq not Iraq, I forget the country, and some secular music spoke to him, and then he'd been in Italy, and he had all these experiences in the Air Force and at Nellis Air Force Base in Las Vegas, where he was a young Playboy pilot, you might say. And through all these experiences, God just kept reaching out to him, reaching out to him. Through Amy Grant, even,
wow.
This Air Force guy.
Wow.
Through the singer, Amy Grant. And through an experience at Tower Records in Las Vegas, Nevada. This accumulation of experiences that brought Donald Wellington – he's almost like a spy, really intriguing guy. And I had the opportunity to interview him in Washington, D.C. Wouldn't go on camera, wouldn't go on audio. I had to just sit and take notes because of security concerns. Mm-hmm. And he has a great story in here. And I think people find it really engaging.
Yeah. It seems that if we're going to be engaged in our faith and active in our desire to spread the hope we have in Christ with others, we should have a collection of these stories ourselves.
Yeah, we should.
Each one of us should be able to have a number of stories of people that we talked to about God mm-hmm. and persisted with and then watched them grow in their faith and come to faith.
And we should hear these testimonies in our churches all the time. And when we don't hear testimonies in our churches for, you know, a long period of time, and then it makes me scratch my head and wonder if something's missing here in what we're doing.
Yeah, even if you can't pinpoint the last time you shared Christ with somebody, don't you have to do a little diagnostic check?
Mm-hmm.
What am I doing if I can't say, May 11th, I had lunch with a friend and I brought up Jesus?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or some level of spirituality, mm-hmm. some area of spirituality that could lead to that conversation about Jesus. Well, this book, you know, we wrote it. Yes, it encourages Christians. Christians would be encouraged by it. What we really wrote it is for your friends.
Okay.
Alpha participants, first-time church visitors. In that visitor's packet, there's a coffee mug and a piece of paper about your church. This book could be the perfect thing to go in the visitor's packet But it's written for those folks out there who are not going to read Mere Christianity necessarily,
right,
or Book of Arguments, but they will read 10 short, compelling stories from ordinary people from a variety of ethnicities,
yeah,
and a variety of age groups who've come to faith.
And at the back of the book, Rick, you've actually,
yes,
left a couple of reflection guide, you call it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if a person is going to be honest, they can answer these questions. Which story did you relate to and why? And maybe talk about your feelings when you read those stories. And, you know, you can do some self-diagnostic as well.
Definitely. And I know you do a lot of work in the recovery movement. I think folks who are in recovery could really get a lot out of the stories in here. And then the reflection guide could be really helpful. Then there's, hey, Sinner's Prayer. I lifted it right off the Billy Graham website.
I love it.
Yeah. If you're ready to make the step of faith here, really commit yourself to Christ, there's a prayer in here that you can pray. But it's not required. This book isn't pushy.
Right.
It's not preachy. It's
right.
Optional. And that's what I wanted the whole thing to have, that gentle, optional feel to it.
Yeah. Well, Rick, this is a great little discovery you made. And you put all these stories together. And I know people love stories like me. And so these are awfully fun to read. And the thing with stories is you do remember them, and they kind of lodge in your brain.
It's, exactly. And you can relate to them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you might find something in these stories that go, well, that's kind of like me. That's the objection I had, or that's the thing I'm facing right now. Here's how that person overcame that through faith. Maybe
yeah.
that could be my life as well.
Yeah. So the book is called Faith Unexpected, and how would I get a hold of this?
FaithUnexpectedStories.com is the best way.
FaithUnexpectedStories.com. Rick
yeah.
Manson has been my guest. Thank you so much for coming into the studio, and great to chat with you.
Okay, thanks, Bill.
Yep, we'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute.
Hi, I'm Ted Ross with a Faith in Life Minute. Pastor Tom Nelson reflects on how the work of Jesus on the cross and Jesus as a carpenter affirms the work we do every day.
The perfect Son of God came on his rescue mission not only to rescue souls, but to rescue this planet. And he really affirmed the dignity of every work. And as I talk with white-collar, blue-collar, it amazes me that particularly blue-collar people think that Jesus, the Son of God who created the universe, came and worked with his hands. And what dignity that gives in building things, making things, and serving people. It is profoundly transforming. Mark chapter 6 tells us that Jesus was the carpenter. People knew him as a carpenter. So we need to not just see that as incidental to the story. We need to see Jesus as a carpenter, dignifying work and giving us a theology of work that profoundly changes how we connect Sunday to Monday.
Hear more from Pastor Tom Nelson and find links to his book, Work Matters, at myfaithradio.com.
Welcome back to the show. So glad you've been with me today. So big 4th of July tomorrow night, so if you want to know how to keep your dog calm during the 4th of July fireworks, here's a couple of tips. You want to cover up the noise if you can. Sometimes turning up the music and just seeing if your dog wants to dance with you would be one way. Try to cover up some of that noise. Also, you could take your dog into a bedroom and turn on the fan. That's kind of nice white noise. That helps them not hear the explosions outside. And then also, If you swaddle them a little bit, I guess there are some companies that sell like anxiety jackets that you can put on. And all that really does is just sort of give them some support and protection. So I think you can do the same thing by just having your dog cuddle next to you on the couch. That's not all bad, is it? That's just a nice time spending with your dog. But I want to leave with a verse today out of Proverbs chapter 14, verse 34. This is out of the King James Version. Says righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. So have a great night. Thank you so much for listening. I absolutely love my listeners, and I appreciate all of you for supporting Faith Radio. I can't say enough nice things about you, and I'll brag about you for the rest of the night. So have a great night. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.